you have had success with therapy, mm-hmm. regardless of all of your circumstances, mm-hmm. regardless of your 27 kids that you have. But you follow through with the home exercise program, you carry over, and you have had success.
Right.
And so I think that it's important to share that with families.
Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, and we wanted to remind you guys that we have our membership site, the Sensory Project Club, and it is alive and thriving. We are sharing resources, handouts, templates, guides, how-to videos. Oh my word, we could go on and on because we are sharing all the things with our members. So if you want to become a member, just go to thesensoryprojectclub.com and get signed up. We cannot wait to see you guys in there.
Just a quick reminder before we get started. If you haven't listened to our interview with Alex Doman from Advanced Brain Technologies yet, you need to check it out ASAP. Because after we interviewed him, we teamed up with him and his team to bring you guys a special offer on any of their products, including the listening program. Just head over to our website, thesensoryproject.com/pages/podcast to get started today. And then you can use our code, thesensoryproject, for a discount on any of their programs. We're both certified providers and can help you experience the amazing benefits that come from ABT's programs.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica.
This is episode 71, and we are interviewing a mom, and a mom who has experienced therapy with multiple children.
And different types of therapy for different children.
And this is also a mom who has children who don't look like they have special needs. Mm-hmm. I know that's very stereotypical, but when you would look at her family, you would just see a family. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't see vision problems or autism or feeding challenges. You would just see a family, but she's been through it.
She has been through it all. And she has so much experience going through life with therapy, and she has so much to share. And so we just wanted to spread this message and get her story out in the world because we truly believe that it can help so many people.
So make sure you listen all the way to the end because you don't want to miss any of it.
All right, let's do it. We have secret questions that we're going to ask you that you don't know about.
Okay.
But maybe you do because you listen to our
podcast. Because I listen to your podcast.
Oh, no, that's true.
But we change them. Okay. Now we change
them. Surprise me.
Okay, so what is your favorite dessert?
Oh, anything sea salt caramel.
Really?
Yes. So I just finished off the last of our sea salt caramel ice cream last night because it was a stressful day. Or like sea salt caramel chocolate.
Yes.
Anything sea salt
with the
caramel.
Big sea salt, like the big chunks of sea salt.
Like the ones you get at Costco and they come in that like
Those are my very favorite. My in-laws gave me those for Christmas and I ate one a day until like midsummer they ran out.
Oh, you're so good.
Right?
Wow.
Yes.
It's impressive. Okay, number two. What does your morning routine look like?
Oh, my word. All right. So,
this is awesome.
So, you'll find this out about me, but I have 8 children. So, my day starts at 7 o'clock. My teenage girls actually get up at 6:30 because they have hair to do. My teenage boy doesn't wake up to an alarm. So, I wake up at 7 and I go downstairs and I wake him up. And then the high schoolers, the 3 high schoolers leave at 7:20, and then it's time to get the middle schoolers up and get them ready. And my middle schoolers leave, 2 of them leave at 8, and then it's time to get the elementary kids up and get them ready. And then I get them ready and send them off to school at 9, and then I still have one at home. And usually it's getting ready to go to therapy, which we'll talk about later. But so from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning, I am shipping kids off to school, and it's a full production, and it it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a
lot.
So then that's just getting me out the door.
Right?
So then do you wake up early for time for yourself before they get up?
Don't.
No?
I don't, because then once I get them all gone, that's my time.
Okay.
Gabe, my youngest, goes to therapy, and I drop him off, and then I go out walking while he's at therapy.
Oh,
and I have a solid hour on one day and an hour and a half on the next where I get to walk, and it's my me time. I listen to my podcast while I walk. That's my me time. I find with teenagers, I'm up till midnight every night, and to wake up early, I'd rather take my sleep. Yeah. So I find the me time once they're all gone and the house is quiet, and yes, I still have one, but compared to eight, he's so much quieter, and I can find my me time then.
Yeah,
love perfect. That. But I like that you take your me time. I love that you go for a walk.
I do.
Yes. That is like, oh, yes. I love that.
Such a great idea.
Yep. And when he's not at therapy, I load him in the stroller and we walk. And that's my me time. Again, I have one AirPod in, the other out, so I can hear him talking while I listen to my podcast.
Yes. Multitasking
right?
at its finest. Yes. That's motherhood, right?
That is motherhood.
One ear in, one ear out. What's up, kid? I got you.
Yep.
Sometimes I'm only halfway listening to him, but you know, still halfway listening.
That's another life too.
It is.
So we were going to ask what you're reading, but since you mentioned podcasts, I want to know what podcasts you listen to.
Yes. So I listen to you guys because my life is one big therapy session. So I love listening to it because one thing that you don't get as a mother sending your kids to therapy, and you get a little recap at the end when the therapist comes out and says, here's what we did, but you don't get really to see what they're learning and what they're doing. And so I love your podcasts because I get to hear the why and the how and everything that I know my kids are doing at therapy, but now I'm included in it.
That's why we did it. Literally the exact reason we started it.
When my kids started therapy, I thought, I should be included in this. Like, why am I not back there? Why don't they have a training session for parents?
Yes.
Like, I need to know because it's fine to take them for an hour, but then I have them the rest of the week, and I need to be able to know this. So I love that you guys teach me that.
Yes.
And then my other podcast that I really love is Criminal.
Ooh. Oh, you're one of those.
It's just these random criminal stories. Like, you know, sometimes they'll pick something from the 1800s. Sometimes they'll pick something current. It's just this, you know, it's just fun.
Yeah.
That's my other favorite. Check out, right?
It's like those TV shows, those crime TV shows. The podcast
edition. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. This is my favorite question.
All right.
What is your sensory quirk?
Okay, so I knew you were going to ask me this, so I've been thinking about it. So my sensory quirk is at night when I go to bed, I cannot have my feet in the covers. And it drives my husband crazy because the sheet is always untucked at the bottom because I pull the covers up and then I stick my feet out and pull the sheet aside because I cannot have the sheets or covers touching my feet. And it's weird, I know. And
like, grandma does the same thing.
Even in winter when it's my feet are cold, I can't have covers touching them.
All right.
Weird.
Is it like the fact that it's like pushing your toes down?
I just don't like the feel of having them covered. Mm-hmm. I also go barefoot all the time. Like, even in midwinter, I wear flip-flops because I don't like having my feet enclosed. It's weird.
That's a good one.
It's
weird. That's why we're here, right? We got to, you know, just make sure. And you're barefoot right now.
I'm barefoot right now.
And it's freezing.
Because I had flip-flops on that I slipped off at the door.
Oh, gosh.
So good.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting one.
Yeah, that's a new one.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so last one. If you had to describe yourself in one word, what would it be?
Busy. Busy.
I would agree.
Or overwhelmed. I would go between those. They go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Busy or overwhelmed.
Yeah. So let's take that one step further. Mm-hmm. How do you handle the busyness and the overwhelm
with eight kids?
Right. I've learned what matters and what doesn't. Mm. And I didn't know that as a young mom. I stressed about things that I found out later really didn't matter. And so I learned to prioritize what is pressing and what can wait. I make lists all the time on my phone. In the notes section on my phone, you can do little bubbles. And I love to like put the check mark in the little bubble. But I did it just this morning. I was reviewing my list and changing it for this week. But I really just don't worry about the stuff that doesn't matter.
Can you give us an example of one of those things?
Mm-hmm. So my little guy, Gabe, who's 3, doesn't like to wear shoes. Mm-hmm. And he probably gets that from me. With my older kids, I would stress about it. I'm like, I can't take you to the store barefoot. Mm. Like, I can't do that. What are people going to think? And I'm like, I totally can take you to the store barefoot. Yeah. We park next to the cart return. I put you in the cart. You never have your feet touch the ground. It's fine. It's not a battle that I need to fight. And we have enough battles that we are fighting that mm-hmm. it's when I don't need to.
Yeah.
And it's okay that people look at me and go, your child's barefoot in public. Like, don't really care.
Yeah. Not the battle I'm fighting today.
Not the battle I'm fighting today.
Yeah, I love that. Now we get to jump into the good stuff. So tell us who you are, what you do, why you do it, how you do it.
All right. So about me, I kind of think that the only thing I am is a mom. But once upon a time, I was really cool. I grew up in Eastern Idaho, and I graduated as valedictorian of my high school class.
Wow!
Went to college, spent 5 years getting my teaching degree in elementary education.
Really?
Met my husband at college, and we have been married for almost 21 years.
Yes.
This December, I met him my senior year, so I was able to graduate and get all that done before we started our family. And when we started our family, we had been married for 3 years and had our oldest and then just kept going. And we have 8 kids.
Kept going.
There was never a good stopping point. We were having too much fun. I loved babies too much. Yeah. So we ended with 8 kids and we are done now. But I've been very lucky that I've been able to spend my whole time as a mom, as a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. which proved to be really valuable because with 8 kids, you're going to end up with a few that have struggles. And with my background in education, I've been able to help them and I've been able to be there and help them with their extra needs, which has been really needed.
Yeah.
But I also once upon a time used to run. I've run 5 half marathons and 1 full marathon.
God,
I hate running.
No, I envy you.
So that was my me time. I started running after my 4th, and it was my me time. I needed to be out. I needed to hear my feet hit the pavement very rhythmically. I needed to be able to look up and see the birds flying ahead. I needed that break because I was so overwhelmed. I had 4 kids in 4.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. And I don't have time to run these days. I hope to be able to run again. Mm-hmm. But it provided therapy that I needed at that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other than that, I'm just a mom.
Great. That is why you're here.
Okay.
That's why we want to talk to you and share your story, because you've been through a lot.
I have.
With your 8 kids, or your 27 kids.
27 kids.
But, you know, through the years, you've had ones that have struggled more mm-hmm. than others, and you've been able to help them. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay. So first I'll introduce you to my kids. My oldest just turned 18. She's an adult. I have an adult.
So scary. I can't imagine.
Right? That's giving me heart palpitations. But she, Savannah, she is just steady and patient and good, like innately good. And then I have Josh. He's 16, and he is our family jokester. He has just this amazing sense of humor, and he can take the most stressful situation and make us all laugh. Then there's Sarah. She's 15. She is my artsy one. She is so artistic. Aaron is 13, and he is very genuine and very insightful, but he also has this thirst for knowledge, and the librarians know him because he lives in the library, and every night he's saying, I need a new book. I need a new book.
I love it.
Nate is 11, and he's funny. He's still trying to figure out his place in the world, but he is very thoughtful. He's very quiet and deliberate in the stuff he does. And then Owen is 8. He is going to be my engineer someday. He has a mind that can just figure those things out. He walks around going, Mom, what's 3,000 times 1,000 plus? And I'm like, oh, I don't even know that.
Oh.
Kate is 6 and thinks she's 16. She is just full of energy and life and spunk. And then Gabe is my 3-year-old, and he is at that magical stage where I'm his world. And he tells me 20 times a day that he loves me and just wants to never leave my side. And it's so adorable. But if you line them all up and look at them, you would not know that there's anything wrong with any of them.
Well, there's not.
There's not.
Let's just say that.
There's not.
There's nothing wrong.
There's not. And they all have their struggles.
Yes.
But looking at them, you would not be able to see what they struggle with.
Yes.
But I have had 5 of them go through some sort of therapy.
I'm trying to picture it in my head. Which,
right?
Yeah, it is.
And that's a lot. That's a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
Currently, I have 3 in therapy. But at one point, I've had 5 of them in various therapies. So would you like me to tell you which ones?
what the therapies were that your kids
have
been in.
Okay, so I'm going to start. Our first experience with therapy was with Aaron, who's 13. When he was a baby, he was the dreamiest baby. He would just lay on the floor and entertain himself, and I thought I was so blessed. And then he hit 1.5 or 2 years, and he got really, really, really hard. And I didn't know. I had no knowledge of what could be causing him to be hard. But I knew some moms who had kids with autism, and I thought, well, okay. Like, that was the only disability I knew of, was autism. So I talked to them, and some things fit and some things didn't, so I ruled it out. But when he was starting kindergarten, and I told his teacher, I said, I think we have something. I just don't know what it is. And I said, but keep an eye on him. And every time I talked to her, she's like, he's fine. He's rambunctious, but he's fine. He's just boy. And then at Christmas time, she came to me and she said, we have something now. We have something. And I said, well, what is it? And she said, he can't hold his pencil the right way. And I went, that's what you're seeing? Because I could care less about how he held his pencil. I cared that he was throwing tantrums in the middle of public. I cared that he would sit down and refuse to go, and I would be dragging him along because he didn't want to leave what he was doing. I was concerned about that. She was concerned about his pencil. Had the OT, the school OT, come in and evaluate him, and that OT said, I'm really concerned. But he's so smart, we can't devote any school resources towards this. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to get an outside opinion, which we did. And we landed with a sensory processing disorder diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And he started occupational therapy. And I was clueless. I knew nothing. I had never even heard of occupational therapy. And the first book I read was The Out of Sync Child.
Love that one.
Love that book. And I read it, and every page I would turn and I go, this is so Aaron. This is Aaron. And my husband's like, you are a little too excited about this. But I'm like, they know my child.
Yeah,
and it was the first time that I'd had somebody know my child so well. This random book talking about this diagnosis. And I'm like, but this is everything described to him. And for the first time, I didn't blame myself for his behavior. For the first time, I understood his behavior instead of thinking that I was failing as a mother. And that was life-changing. And as we went through therapy, first he did 1 hour a week. After a couple years, we graduated to 2 hours a week. He's still in therapy. He's 13. We started at 5. He's still in therapy. So it's not an immediate fix. It's not even a permanent fix. It's something that he is always going to struggle with. I should add, a couple years ago, we got an autism diagnosis on top of it. And it was something I'd always fought because I felt like what we were doing was working and felt like the only thing an autism diagnosis would do was give him a label. And I was really hesitant to give him that label. But it came to a point where we needed it to be able to get extra help with school. People don't know what sensory processing disorder is. They do know autism. That's that's the word that they do know. So we did get that diagnosis, and honestly, it didn't change anything other than he understood himself more. And that's how I brought it to him. And I said, do you want to understand your brain more? Because we can do a test and we can talk to someone that can help us understand you better. And he said, I do. Like, he is so brilliant. He he tested at the 99.98 percentile for his IQ. Wow. He's brilliant. And when we got his autism diagnosis, she actually diagnosed him as twice exceptional, mm-hmm. that he was a genius and he had autism. And the thing I loved about that diagnosis is that she listed them equal. Mm-hmm. That he was exceptional because he was brilliant, and he was exceptional because he had autism. It was not a disability. It was not something that was, you know, on one end and the genius was on the other. They were hand in hand, equally twice exceptional. And I have learned to view it as that. That there's nothing, like you said, there's nothing wrong with him. He needs a different style of teaching. Mm-hmm. He needs the heavy work you always talk about. We did the Velcro strips under his desk at school. Yes. We did the stretchy bands on the legs of his chairs. And that's what therapy provided, is that heavy work, that input. And when he was exhausted, that's when his body could make the progress. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he's still in therapy, but it's been life-changing for us. If I think back to how it was before he started, when he was a five-year-old, and I was ready to just give up and say, I can't, I just can't. And therapy gave us the way that we could. But he has to work harder than everyone else. And and the first time he didn't want to tell someone was he signed up to play seventh grade basketball last year. He made C team. There were seven kids on his team, but two of them didn't have enough grades to play. So like the whole season, it was like five of them.
Oh gosh.
But I asked him, I said, do you want me to tell your coach? Because I worried how he would react when things didn't go his way. He's a rule follower. Rachel knows this. He follows rules. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone doesn't follow the rules, he loses it. And I thought basketball is going to test him to his limit, and it might be helpful if the coach understands why he might flip out. Mm-hmm. And Aaron said, I don't want to tell him. And I said, all right, that's your choice. We didn't tell him, and he had a fabulous season, and he never struggled, and he was great. And I just went, you know what? He's okay. Yeah. He's okay.
He's going to make it.
Right? He's going to make it. And I think it's so important to put it into their hands. Like, it's in their control of who they tell. Mm-hmm. If they don't want someone to know, and they want to feel like they're just like every other kid, let them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not interfering with their success.
Yes.
But the earth shattering, one of my friends has started taking her son to therapy, and she was talking to me and she said, the school wants to test him for autism. And I said, I think that's a great idea. I said, but let me prepare you for this. Yeah. And I said, it's going to feel so heavy, and it's going to feel like nothing is ever going to be okay. And you have to remember that nothing changes. Mm-hmm. Nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. And I remember her talking to me after he got the diagnosis, and she's like, you're right. You're so right. And I'm glad you told me that, because it gave me perspective. And yeah, I mean, it's so hard to hand this to parents, because you have these dreams of what your kid's going to be like. And then when those dreams get changed and you have to adapt, you have to realize that it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. And yeah, it might not be the life you envisioned, but it's still going to be a really fantastic life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, I feel for parents going through it. I've been through it for so long that I'm kind of numb to it. But I recognize those parents who are just finding out, just starting on the journey.
It's a lot of the and parents it's heavy. Who are listening right now.
It's heavy.
It is. And it's scary and overwhelming. And like, you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important to share our stories.
It is. And I'd love to say that that's our only therapy story, but it's not. My little three-year-old, when he was born, for some reason he didn't want food. Like, it's innate. People want food. I want food. People need food. It's something that your body is trained to do for self-preservation. He did not want to eat. And we fought this with a bottle. He had to be half asleep to drink his bottle, because if he was awake, he'd push it aside. He never held a bottle himself. I always had to hold it. When he started baby food, he would vomit. He couldn't swallow it. And anyway, it was a long year, And every time I'd go to my pediatrician, he'd say, but he's growing. He's fine. He's growing. And I'm like, but you don't understand what a fight this is. This is controlling my life, trying to get this kid to eat. And finally, at a year, he referred us to a pediatric gastroenterologist who then did a bunch of medical tests, did a scope, different things, special formula, medicine for reflux, a whole slew of things that medically we needed to correct for him to be able to eat. But then he referred us to feeding therapy. I had no idea feeding therapy was a thing. Once again, I mean, I had been doing therapy for years and I didn't know that feeding therapy existed. So he landed in feeding therapy. And what they found in feeding therapy is that because he didn't want to eat, he had not developed the milestones that babies do. Babies learn to hold a bottle at 5 months. They learn midline, holding a bottle. They learn to pick up Cheerios with their forefinger and their thumb, the pincher grip. They learn that because they're feeding themselves. They learn to hold a spoon and to get it. He did not do that. And an extension of that, he also didn't play with toys because so much of baby toys is straight to the mouth. And he didn't want anything in his mouth. So he didn't play with toys. So this kid had not had any fine motor development for that entire year. So when we started feeding therapy, they quickly figured out that he needed occupational therapy also. And which then we also ended up in speech because his muscles hadn't developed in his mouth. So he has done, he just had therapy this morning. He's still in OT. He did graduate from speech and he still is doing feeding therapy because the way the GI described it is that the brain knows when milestones are supposed to be met. That's why you can go to a pediatrician's office and they have the poster on the wall saying, at this month, they're going to do this. At this month, they're going to do this. Because that's the natural progression when the brain picks it up. And when those are missed, it takes so much longer for the brain to learn them. And that's where we have been. So we've been playing catch up with him. I used to watch other babies eat. And he's so insanely jealous because my baby didn't eat. And now my baby eats. He's three and he eats just like everyone else. He's slower. And we have to make sure that he's doing it carefully for safety because he still is learning portion control, chewing, you know, clearing his mouth, things that you don't think about when you're eating. But it has been life-changing with him because I went from having this one-year-old that was strictly bottle fed and only in the rocking chair in his room with the Cricut machine going, with everybody blocked out as he was half asleep. That was how I fed him, to being able to throw a fruit leather strip back at him as we're driving down the road and say, here's a snack, eat it.
Throw it back.
Has made huge, huge progress there. Just the other day, the feeding therapist was talking about how he had checked off all of his goals for the year and it was time to rewrite new goals. And I said, I know we're not there yet, but it feels like we're so close. And she said, we are. We are almost there. And had we not had that, I don't know where we would be. He would probably have failure to thrive. He would not be happy. He would not be thriving. Our lives would still be revolving around trying to get him to eat. Not being able to leave our house because he won't eat in strange places. So that's our success story number two.
Amazing. Yes.
Our third therapy. It keeps going.
But they're all success stories, though.
My little 8-year-old Owen, he is my number 6 child. So, you know, I felt like I knew what I was doing by the time he came along.
I felt like I knew what I was doing.
But he talked nonstop, and I couldn't understand a word he said. And I knew that speech came at stages. I mean, I'd been through 5 other kids, and I thought, it'll come. It's fine. It'll come. And he hit age 4, and I still could not understand him, which then led us to the early intervention screening through the school district and landed us in early intervention preschool for speech, and landed us also in private speech therapy twice a week. And I loved the preschool. I did. But it was a group setting, and it was kids who had all sorts of struggles. It was not just speech kids. So, you know, he was getting a little bit of it, but that was not the primary focus. And when he started regular school, he was on an IEP through kindergarten and first grade and got pulled out once a week for half an hour for group speech. And it was not enough for him. So we did twice a week private speech therapy for years. And then we cut back to once a week. And we did 4 years of speech. And he graduated last January.
Yay!
Right? Except.
What?
He started to regress. I mean, we had him where he needed to be. And without the constant reminder, he started to regress. And just last month, I brought him in for a reevaluation and said, I'm seeing it. Tell me I'm just imagining it. And she said, no, we need to get him back in. So he's currently going every other week because he knows it all.
Yes.
He knows it. He just needs that reminder and that practice, which speaks to speech therapy because he was doing great. And as soon as we quit... We needed to go back.
But I like that they're able to do kind of more consultation-based, right?
Right.
Every other week.
Right.
So it's not...
Right. Because I think they realize what a huge thing it is to have to step back into this. And, you know, to recognize that he's already 90% there. We just need to keep it there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's back at speech. But still a really happy story. Because I remember when he was little... He would tell me things, and I would say, stop and tell me again. And he'd tell it to me again, and I would say, okay, one more time, because I was trying so hard to understand him. And about the third time, he would just say, never mind. And it would break my heart because he had things to say. And I was patient enough, but other people weren't. They would just brush him off and just move on and ignore it. And this kid had these great ideas and great stories, and he wanted to be heard, and he couldn't be. And that's what therapy gave him, is the ability to be heard and to feel like people paid attention to him and that people valued what he had to say. And it was such a relief to him to be able to say something and know that someone was going to understand him. All right, so our last therapy experience was with vision therapy. And I know you guys did a podcast about this, about vision therapy.
Yes, a little.
Whether it was ADD, vision therapy, and that's exactly where we landed. So, my son Aaron had been in OT, and Rachel was his therapist. We talked about whether or not I can say that. She was his therapist. We love Miss Rachel. She, for years, what, about 5 years?
Yeah.
helped my Aaron, too. And we used to call her the Aaron Whisperer.
Oh, my gosh.
Home, if we were struggling with them, we'd just go, well, what would Rachel want you to do? And all of a sudden, he would shape up.
That's great.
But she had noticed in therapy, like tossing him a ball, he was having a hard time catching it. And she said, you know, it could be motor planning that, you know, he just isn't coordinated enough, but it also could be vision where he's not tracking it with his eyes. And she said, you should take him in for a vision screen. And I said, oh, we did. We just were at the eye doctor last week. His vision's fine. And she said, no, this is different. And she started to explain it to me. And I went, oh my gosh, this is Joshua. He was 13 at the time. I said, this is my Josh. So going into sixth grade, I seriously considered getting him tested for ADHD because he was not getting his homework done. He would come home from school and he would sit down to do his homework. And 6 hours later, he was still doing his homework and had just gotten such little done. And his teachers would complain and say, we give him time in class. And he's staring off into nothing, doing nothing with his class time. And I thought, okay, it's an attention problem. And, but along with that, when he would read or do his homework, he would turn his head completely sideways so that he was looking out of the very outside corner of one eye down at the paper. And I thought, that's not normal. Of course, that's not normal. So I took him to an eye doctor and they said, yeah, he needs glasses. And they put him in glasses. Well, he kept doing that. He turning his head, looking out of the very corner of his eye. So, you know, he couldn't even see out of the eye that was turned up and looking out of the down eye. And the next time his eye doctor appointment came up, I took him and I said, he's still doing this. And they said, his vision's fine. It's just a quirk.
Oh my God. I hate that so much.
I knew it wasn't a quirk, but I had a professional telling me that it was. So I accepted it because I didn't know where else to go from there.
Yeah.
So when Rachel says, I think you should have Aaron tested and told me everything. And I went, that's Josh. So I took them both They sat together, took turns in the eye doctor chair, and Aaron's eyes turned out to be fine. Joshua's were not. So he, when he would look from his paper up to the board or to look at his teacher, what his teacher was saying, it took a full 14 seconds for things to come into focus.
What?
And then looking back down in his paper, 14 seconds for his eyes to come into focus. Wow. Now you think about that with a kid. He's copying something from a board. He's looking up to see what his teacher's saying and then looking down at his paper. If you're waiting 14 seconds between each time looking up and down, you're just going to stop.
I would stop.
You're just going to stop. The other thing his eyes were doing is that they were not working together when he was reading. So if you take your finger and you hold it out in front of your eyes, and everyone do this, hold your finger out past your nose, and then you close one eye and then close the other, your finger jumps back and forth, depending on which eye you're using to look at it. That's what his eyes were doing. They weren't working together. So his brain was trying to decide which one to use, which one to read. So he would look at a paper and his brain's jumping back and forth between his eyes and the words are jumping all over the page. One of the things they did in his testing was give him a bunch of shapes, and it was simple shapes that he had to match, and it got progressively harder. It was like a 50-page test.
Oh, wow.
And the shapes got more intricate and more complicated, and he got to page 3, and he said, I can't. They're jumping all over the place. I can't make out these shapes. That's what he was going through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you do? Well, vision therapy. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what vision therapy was. No, I'd never even heard of it. And it was not covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. It was 5 months long. It was driving a half an hour each way. And
how many times a week?
Twice a week.
Twice a week.
I took a leap of faith and said, I hope this works because I don't know what else will.
Mm-hmm.
And we did vision therapy for him. And guess what? It worked.
Oh, my gosh.
We got to the end of vision therapy, and I noticed his grades going up. I noticed he was not bringing homework home anymore. And at first, I'm like, are you just not doing your homework? No, he was finishing it in class.
Wow.
He went from 6 hours of homework a night to nothing because he was doing it in class.
Mm-hmm.
It was night and day different.
Now, did he notice a difference?
He did.
Yeah.
He absolutely did. Kind of a fun story.
So we love these.
Right? We did his vision therapy in the middle of, if you're from here, you'll know 3 years ago we had Snowmageddon.
Yes, we did.
It snowed and snowed and snowed and we could not plow the roads fast enough and it iced and it was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were doing vision therapy through Snowmageddon.
Oh, did you?
And I remember the day because it was December 19th because it was my anniversary. And we had just gone into vision therapy and it had started snowing. And when we came out, it was just covered. And it's a half an hour drive. And it was my anniversary. And my husband had reservations for us that night. And we started to drive. And traffic was moving at 5 miles an hour. And that night, what should have been a half an hour took us 2.5 hours to get home. It was just a bunch of whiteout snow and red car stop brake lights. And as I called my husband and said, you're going to have to cancel our reservations. I'm not going to make it home. I'm sorry. And we're driving and I'm becoming more and more frustrated because that's not where I wanted to be. It was my anniversary. And, you know, we're probably an hour and a half into the drive and I was just so exasperated. And I turned to Josh and, you know, he's 13. And I said, Josh, I hope you appreciate this. And he completely serious turned and looked at me and he said, I do, Mom. He said, what you are doing for me is changing my life. What you are doing for all of us with Aaron and all of the therapies, you're changing our lives. Now, I don't know if you've ever spent any time with a 13-year-old boy. They're clueless.
Yeah.
They don't think about that. And so for him to pull that out, I knew without a doubt that he knew it was changing his life and that all of the time that I was putting into this was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It was totally worth it.
Thanks for making me cry.
So yes, he at 13 noticed that it worked.
That's amazing.
I keep going with therapy.
That's why we're here.
Our last therapy was our daughter, Sarah. She, when she was in first grade, came home with a school letter from the school nurse saying she had failed her vision exam because they screen all first graders. And I said, Sarah, why don't you tell me you can't see? And she said, I can see, Mom. I don't know what they're talking about. So I took her to the eye doctor, and it turned out that she had amblyopia. If you don't know what that is, it's when one eye sees significantly worse than the other eye. She had 20/20 in one eye. She had 20/200 in the other eye. And what happens is your brain says, you're useless to me. I'm just going to look out of the good eye. And so she could. She had 20/20 vision, but out of only one eye. Yes. And so the brain starts turning that eye off. That's when you see lazy eye, when an eye turns in, because the brain stops using that eye. And we hadn't gotten there yet, but we were on our way. So we spent an entire summer. Well, the first thing we did was correct it with glasses. Mm-hmm. One lens was just plain glass. The other was a very heavy prescription. And even corrected, the best we could get her vision to was 20/80.
Wow.
So we did chemical patching that summer where we put an eye drop in her good eye, which would knock out the near vision. It's basically dilating her eye so that her brain had to read through the bad eye. And as that brain started turning back on, we were able to get that vision better. And we ended with 20/35 corrected in her bad eye, which the eye doctor said, that's better than I had hoped. I thought the best we would get was 20/40.
Yeah.
Well, fast forward to Josh is doing vision therapy, and one day I'm just chatting with the doctor, and I'm like, you know, our daughter Sarah, this is totally unrelated, but she has amblyopia, and you know, we did all this and we got her to 20/35, thinking that I'm bragging about all this that we did and got her to this. And he goes, I can get her to 20/20.
What?
And I said, no, you can't. Like, you don't understand everything we did to get her to 20/35. And he goes, I can get her to 20/20. And I was seeing all this progress with Josh, so I said, all right. And I signed up for another 5 months of vision therapy. Right in the spring this time. And he did. He got her to 20/20 in her correct, bad eye with corrected vision, which, and it's funny because we still go back for, you know, eye exams with him, and he always brags about Sarah and Josh because he's like, you know, Josh's were so bad and we fixed him. Mm-hmm. And Sarah's, everyone had told you that was the best you could get, and we fixed it. Mm-hmm. We fixed it. Like, guys, I don't know what they do behind those doors. It's magic. It's like some voodoo magic, but it works.
And it works. Because it's like a one and done.
It is. It is. 5 months and you're done. And that was the thing when I sat and was getting the diagnosis and all this, and he's like, we need vision therapy. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, like, Aaron has been going to OT for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I can't add another. And he's like, 5 months. And I'm like, oh, okay, done. This we can handle.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Amazing.
So very successful. We've had OT, we've had feeding, we've had speech, we've had vision, we've had every therapy out there. And I can say, hands down, totally worth it. Mm-hmm. Even with everything that is going on in all of our crazy schedules, that is the one thing that I will say was never a waste of time. Mm-hmm. It was worth it. When Aaron was getting diagnosed, is that I had no resources. Mm-hmm. And again, with Josh, I had no resources. And with Gabe, I didn't know where to go. And so as I've told these stories to other moms, and I never want to diagnose their kids, but I kind of feel like I kind of can spot a kid that is struggling.
Yeah.
And I can tell her my success. I feel like that gives that mom a place to go, because I wish I'd had that. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was trying to figure out what was wrong with Aaron and talking to other moms, and no one had any answers for me. I didn't know what to do. And life is different now. We have Google. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can Google anything. We didn't have that back then.
Yeah.
And I read books, but now everything is so at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. Your podcasts, mm-hmm. everything. Like, I feel like resources now to help moms who are struggling with kids is so much better. And mm-hmm. I mean, that's such a gift. But the more we tell our stories, the more that gets out there so that mm-hmm. they know where to turn.
Yes.
They can say, I recognize that with my child. I'm going to try that. Mm-hmm. I wish someone had done that with me.
Yeah.
I really do.
So now you get to take your experiences and share that with the world.
I do.
So, I mean, yes. Some good comes from it, right?
It does.
From all the struggles and
Right?
You know, being able to share that with everyone and say, I didn't think we were going to make it. Like when Aaron was five and in the grocery store, wherever he's going to fit, and you're like, I'm done, kid. Get your poop in the group because I can't.
I'm like that. Yes. 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 About therapy.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that most people don't talk about. Everyone talks about the good. Everyone talks about how much helpful it is, how worthwhile it is, and it is all of that. But one thing that I wish that people would recognize more is it comes at a cost. And I mean, insurance helps, but still, we have spent so many thousands of dollars on therapy. Vision therapy, insurance didn't cover it all. It was straight out of our pocket. It is a financial burden, and it's hard. And I think sometimes parents just want someone to recognize that. Like, I could have gone to Hawaii 100 times.
Yeah.
I didn't. I put my child through therapy. And I'm like, I don't want someone to recognize that. You know, I don't have new shoes because I'm paying for therapy. I don't go on vacations because I'm paying for therapy. It comes at a cost, and sometimes it's nice for someone to say, I see the sacrifice you're making, and you're awesome for doing that.
I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, that's something
because no one talks about.
It's very taboo.
It is. It's very taboo.
Yeah.
No one talks about how expensive therapy it is.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are help things out there. Like I said, our insurance covers some. Our insurance would make us meet a $3,000 deductible before it would start chipping in on visits, and it would chip in 80%.
This is per child.
Per child for 30 visits, and then it would cut off, and then we're just self-pay the rest of the year. And 30 visits does not get you through the year.
No.
Especially if you have a child going twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So it would help for a little bit in the summer, not in the fall and not in the spring. So insurance helps. There are programs out there if your child qualifies. So one of them is Katie Beckett.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons we went ahead and got an autism diagnosis for Aaron, is hoping to be able to get him on Katie Beckett. And they came out and evaluated him and said he was too high functioning, and they did not approve him for Katie Beckett. Katie Beckett is a part of Medicaid that if a child has a severe enough disability, they will pay for all of your help, all of your therapies. So Aaron did not qualify. But as we were doing that, I thought, well, I can give a shot with Gabe. Gabe was my little guy who didn't have a diagnosis, just didn't eat, so was delayed because he didn't eat. And I said, well, let's apply for Gabe. Well, guess what? Gabe got covered. Gabe got approved for Katie Beckett, which has been wonderful because early intervention is so key.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing 4 therapies a week.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing OT and speech back-to-back one day, and OT and feeding therapy back-to-back the next. And I mean, if I had had to pay that, that would have been astronomical. And I would have had to make the choice of, do I help my child or do I make my house payment?
Mm-hmm.
So Katie Beckett saved us with him. But Katie Beckett is pretty selective in who they do cover.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is help out there. I remember with Owen, I mentioned that he went to speech twice a week. I think it was first grade that I finally went to therapy and I said, we need to cut back to once a week. And I had agonized over that decision, but financially we could not afford twice a week. And because at that point we had Gabe in therapy and Aaron in therapy, and Gabe was not on Katie Beckett at that time. And it was overwhelming. And I had to go and I had to say, I am really sorry, but I need to cut back to once a week. And please tell me that my child isn't going to suffer because of this. And they said, no, we can do once a week. It'll be fine. And they were very great about it. They didn't make me feel like I was being selfish or, you know, sacrificing my child. They understood. But I just think sometimes parents want that recognized.
Yeah.
The sacrifice that they do make, and hands down worth it. But sometimes it's nice to be told, thank you for sacrificing for that. Because I realize it is a sacrifice.
It is.
And not just about new shoes and vacation, but your time.
Right?
You know, I mean, how many hours do you think you spent driving to therapy every week?
Yes.
Or, you know, getting your, you know, you're walking, but still, it's it's a complete
It is a huge time commitment, but the financial, it does take its toll. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that with families. And we've been very blessed that we've been able to afford it. But I really feel for those families who do have to make that decision of, mm-hmm. do I get my child therapy or not?
Yeah.
And like I said, when we cut back to once a week with Owen, I was so eaten up over that, feeling like I was doing my child a disservice by not figuring out how to pay for it. And yeah, that's, I would say that is the hardest thing about therapy, and no one talks about it.
No one does. Oh, thank you for bringing that up and being the one to talk about this. Right? Yes.
So all those parents out there who are like, you know, this hurts, mm-hmm. this hurts financially. I get it.
Yeah.
And if there's any way you can find a way, do it because it's worth it. But I get that it hurts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the time you spend fighting insurance, mm-hmm. we, with our insurance, we get 30 visits. And then if we can prove medical need, they will grant us more. And for a couple years in a row, they did with Owen and Aaron grant us more. And then when we got Aaron's autism diagnosis, that was the first year they said no to more visits.
Really?
And I'm like, we have an autism diagnosis. How can you say this isn't necessary? And we appealed. We get 3 appeals. And this is the other thing. Like, you're fighting insurance. And my husband does insurance for a living, so I knew what to do. But there are parents out there who just take it and go, oh, okay, the insurance said no.
Yeah, they had no idea.
We had 3 appeals. We appealed. And they said no again. And we appealed again, each time providing more documentation of why this was necessary. And the second appeal, they just didn't answer. And by law, they have a certain time frame, like I think it's 90 days to answer, and they just didn't answer. And we spent a year trying to force this insurance company to answer our claim. And we ended up having to take it clear to the Department of Labor, because they have the right to hold the insurance company in violation of state regulations. And we took it clear to him, and he said, yes, you have the right. We can penalize them. We can impose fines for not answering this. He said, but before we do that, tell them that you've done this step and see if it scares them into answering. Mm-hmm. And they finally did, and they approved it a year and a half after our first appeal.
Gosh, after you threatened them.
Right? And then with Aaron, we actually last year switched over to speech, because he needed to work on the social. He needed to have eye contact, carry on conversations, learn conversation taking, like to read cues, social cues, to read moods. He needed that help with his autism. So he switched over to speech, and they denied his speech right off the bat, even though we have 30 visits. And they came back and said, we don't cover autism. And I'm like, how can you not cover autism? Like, in, wow. Like, this was last year. I'm like, everybody covers autism. And so then we had to go to our HR with my husband's company and say, they're telling us you don't cover autism. And she goes, that's a lie. We cover autism. Oh, she said, gosh. I have a kid on the spectrum. There's no way we wouldn't cover autism. Well, she went to their insurance policy and read it. And sure enough, it was excluded. So she rewrote the policy, told the insurance company, We absolutely cover autism.
Wow.
Rewrote the policy because she was not aware. It took us to make this company who has thousands of employees aware that they were not covering autism. Wow. So, you know, fighting the insurance, it takes so much energy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you do it because you're helping your child, mm-hmm. and that's what matters.
Yes.
But it is hard, and some people don't know, and they just take it. And mm-hmm. I wish that there were lessons on people of, here's what help there is out for you. Mm-hmm. Here's what your insurance covers. And if it doesn't, you can ask for more. You absolutely can ask for more. And they will make that decision. But
wow,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, thank the stars that your husband works in insurance.
I know, right?
Right? At least, you know, push a little bit more.
But for everyone, push.
How many people know to do that?
Push with your insurance, because it doesn't hurt to push.
Yes.
Well, and you think about it, they're not just going to give the money away. So you are going to have to be persistent, and you are going to have to jump through hoops and do everything you can, because they're not just going to just give it to you.
Yeah.
But when you go through and you follow the steps and you look at your policy and you fight them, and, you know, usually they do the right thing.
Make it work.
Usually.
Oh, yeah.
So.
One more question you had asked me was the best part of therapy.
Okay.
And I already talked about Josh in the car on that snowy drive, looking at me and saying, you know, you're changing lives. That's the best part. But just a little random best part was when Aaron was first diagnosed and I would take him to therapy and I would sit in the waiting room. I learned to love my time in that waiting room because it was the first place I'd ever been that I didn't feel like other parents were judging me for my child's behavior, because they were all there for the same reason.
Yeah.
And they got it. And they saw when he threw a tantrum, instead of judging me, they felt sympathy, not sympathy, but camaraderie. They understood, and they're like, we get it. And so I found that my favorite place was in that waiting room, because everywhere else in the world, I felt like I was being judged as a mom for my child's behavior. And there, I felt like I was in good company, and everyone understood it. And everyone, all those parents, you know, some had harder walks than I did, but we were this, you know, just, we understood each other. And and that was one of my early perks of being able to be there and feel like I was in good company. It's random, but I remember. And I mean, I don't need that so much these days, because I've learned to just not care about what other people think. Because I know. I know what's wrong with my child. I know why he's acting that way. And I know that it doesn't reflect on me. I know. But back then, I was such a young mom, and I was just trying to do my best. And I felt so judged. And there, I didn't feel judged. And I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my darn. I wish that we could change that stigma.
I do, too. Yeah.
What is it going to take for these people to just be like, oh, cool, your kid's throwing a fit. Great. Hey, you know what?
Fist bump. Right? Yes.
What is it going to take to change that?
And it's just awareness. It's just awareness. And like you said, talking about it more. And, you know, if you see that mom and she's struggling, you know, just give her a... Okay, so this just came to me. I remember one day I had 3 kids in the Walmart shopping cart, and we had just finished our shopping, like 3 in the cart. Like, that takes some doing to have groceries and 3 kids in the cart. And they were all crying because they were done. They were so tired. And I had these 3 kids, and they were screaming and crying, and I'm trying to get out of Walmart as fast as I can because I know everybody's annoyed by it. And there was this sweet mom walking in, and she paused for a second, and she looked at me and she said, "You have such beautiful kids."
Oh.
And I said, "Thank you." And then she kept going in, and I started crying because that's all I needed.
Yeah.
That's all it takes, guys.
Yeah.
Tell them that they have beautiful kids, even when you know that these snot-nosed kids are not beautiful in their fit.
In their moment,
But they're beautiful. They're beautiful. And tell parents that. Tell them they're doing a good job. Tell them that their efforts are noticed, because it matters for those parents who are just fighting to hang on, to have someone recognize that we get it and you're doing a good job. And so, just more awareness, more kindness. I think kindness can go so far in this world. Kindness.
It really can. Say no. Be kinder than you think you need to be.
Exactly.
You never know what someone's going through, or, you know, you have 3 kids screaming, and it's like, just a little bit of compassion, and you know what? You're awesome.
Yeah.
Just keep doing what you're doing. Your kids, they'll be fine.
They'll be fine.
Just adds character.
To everyone in the store.
Your kids licking the floor, that's a little weird, but sure, your kid's great.
So what advice can you give to other parents? Or what advice would you want to give to other parents?
I would say, don't look for the mold. That's what I did with Aaron. I talked to other parents with autism, trying to fit him into that autism mold, and he didn't fit. So I turned away from that and said, well, it must not be autism. And it took us 6 years later before we got our autism diagnosis, because he did not fit in that mold. He had this twice exceptional where he was brilliant, but he struggled socially, and he didn't fit a mold. He had so much going on, and I think too often his parents were like, okay, well, you need to fit this criteria. No. Like, no one fits any criteria. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is to follow your gut. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew. I told that kindergarten teacher, I think we have something. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what. And she kept telling me it's fine. When I told the eye doctor, this isn't normal. And he said, it's normal. I went, okay, fine. But I knew it wasn't. And with Gabe, when he didn't eat and the pediatrician kept saying he's fine because he's gaining weight, I knew he wasn't. Mm-hmm. You as a mother know your kid intimately. You know them better than any other person, whether they have a doctorate and a medical degree or whatever, you know that child. And if you sense that something's off, look until you find the answer. Mm-hmm. Don't look for one step and go, oh, that didn't fit, so we're backing off. Take it 10 steps later if you need to. Mm-hmm. But follow your gut. And if you know that this is interfering with their life, if this is preventing them from having happiness and functioning, keep searching as many steps as it takes until you find the answer. And like I said, back then, I didn't have the resources. We do now. Mm-hmm. We have so many resources at our fingertips that keep searching. Don't stop. If you know your child needs help, look until you find that answer. Look until you find that vision therapy. Look until you find what is going to help your child. And you might look and someone says, this is going to help. And you're like, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And that's okay to say to them, we're not going to take that path, because you do know as a mother what is going to help. But look until you find it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I would say. I wish I had looked harder. I wish when Josh was turning his head in sixth grade and I thought he had ADHD, I wish I had looked further. I wish it hadn't taken us 2 years to get the answer. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd started with my four-year-old when he couldn't be understood. I wish I'd started earlier. I wish at three when I knew he had speech problems, but I thought, oh, it'll get better. Mm-hmm. I wish I had looked then. So my advice is, know your children, know that you know them better than anyone, and you be their advocate and look for what is going to help.
Can I quote that?
Yeah, you can.
Yep. That's beautiful.
Yes.
Thanks.
I think I know you, and I'm like inspired just sitting here talking to you. You have so much knowledge, mm-hmm. just from your experience, and it's just so important to share it.
It is so important to share it. And that's the other thing that I tell parents. Tell your story. Mm-hmm. When Josh was told that he needed vision therapy, like I said, I'd never heard of it. And I had a mom say, oh, no, my son did vision therapy. Her son was totally grown by then, so he'd done it like 10, 15 years earlier. I loved her story because she said he was in fourth grade and he couldn't read. And she pulled him out of school and was homeschooling him because he couldn't read. And he went to church one day and his teacher asked him to read a scripture and he couldn't. And this teacher came to her afterwards and said, now, did you know that your son can't read? And she said, I almost punched her in the face right there. Because of course she knew he couldn't read. She's like, first she was insinuating that as his mother, I was unaware. She's like, I was his mother and his teacher. And second, that I hadn't done everything within my power to fix it. Mm-hmm. And she said, it wasn't much later that we found vision therapy, which, same as Josh, turned things around and totally fixed it. He went on to college, got a master's, like, totally great. But I loved that story because she's like, you know, I was doing everything I could. And from the outside, people thought I was a negligent mom. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't, but I'm like, all right, well, why didn't you tell me this story before? So I knew about vision therapy before. But tell your story, because people need to hear it.
Yeah.
And the more you tell your experiences, the more people will go, oh yeah, if that worked for her, I'm going to try that. Yeah. That sounds like what would help my child.
Yeah.
So tell your story.
Definitely.
The world.
Bring more awareness.
Anything else you want to add?
Oh, I don't know. Yes, find the joy. I have 8 kids, and I wouldn't have done that if I didn't find joy in it. Mm-hmm. But there have been times when it was really hard to find the joy. Mm-hmm. And as a mom, you have to find the joy, even in the hard times, mm-hmm. Especially with special needs kids. You have to find the joy in parenting them. Embrace it. And it's so easy to get overwhelmed. It's so easy to get discouraged. There's so much. But look for the joy.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you an interesting, a funny thing about that? Since you brought it up and since, you know, we're talking about this. You come to therapy and all the therapists would be like, man, Karen is always so happy. Like, she, no matter what, I mean, she has so much on her plate all the time, but she is the parent who is consistently the happiness and always, like, you know, smiling, eager to hear what we're working yep. on and, like, carrying it over. It's like, we all just need to be more like
her. I love that. No, like, seriously. And I love that you recognize that because it's something that I have really tried to do.
Oh, yeah.
I have tried to find the joy and trying to find the happiness, mm-hmm. even in the hard times, yeah. even in the therapy, even in the meltdowns, even in all of that. I've tried to realize, back to the beginning, like I said, what matters and what doesn't. What matters is that your child knows that you love them mm-hmm. and that you enjoy having them.
Yes.
They have to know that. They have to.
They do.
Yeah.
And all your kids know that, which
they do.
Fantastic.
They do. I hope they know
good.
That.
Yes.
So. Yes.
Well, you're going to have to let them listen to this episode.
Right? I'm going to make them all listen to it.
Yes.
You're all going to listen.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my sister is taking care of my 3-year-old right now so I could come do this. And she's like, what podcast? And I said, well, it's about therapy. And I'm like, which really no one listens to unless they have a child with special needs. And she's like, I'll totally listen to
it.
Yay. And I hope that more parents do because even if you don't have a child that has special needs, you're going to have a neighbor. You're going to have a kid mm-hmm. in your class. You're going to have a friend that comes to your house. Like mm-hmm. knowing how to recognize and respond is valuable whether you're dealing with it firsthand or if you're just experiencing it, you know, when you go to the park and you see a kid or you're going to school and help volunteering in your kid's classroom and you're reading with that one kid where you're like, I get why you're struggling. I get it. And it's okay.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to know this.
Yes. Yeah, and that's, you know, our goal is to just get this information out there in the world, even for, mm-hmm. you know, it's important for kids who don't have a diagnosis or who aren't struggling, you know, and I mean, we talk about all these things that need to be talked about
right.
regardless, just development and hey, mm-hmm. tummy time, it's important, or hey,
right.
tactile processing, it's important, you know, and
walking barefoot in grass, it's important.
Yes.
That's my kids, they're always like, oh, don't mow the grass. And I'm like, barefoot, guys, come on, you have to learn this.
I do love that you like to be barefoot.
Yes. Yes.
I do have one last thing that I want to shout out.
Yes.
I know that it's been instrumental in your family.
Yes.
But you have, your almost your whole family has participated with Game Changers.
Oh, yes.
Right? And so.
So glad you brought it up.
Yeah. Gabe was our first.
Yes.
Gabriel was our first interview.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't even remember how long ago it was that you guys started.
5 years. We were in his very first season.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
He dropped off flyers to
yes.
you. And you said...
He came and observed.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's when he met...
Yeah.
Aaron. And Aaron was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do this.
Yes, he was. And
right.
he had done another football program that was more competitive, and he, bless his heart, he would be out there, and the music would be playing, and the cheerleaders are going, and he's doing cartwheels and dancing to the music while the play is going on. And this coach is yelling from the sidelines, there's no dancing on the field! I'm like, but this kid hears music, and this just builds up in him, and it's his natural reaction to just bust out and to dance. And I quickly realized that that was not a good fit. So when Game Changers came out, we looked into it, and I went, this is perfect. So what it does is it pairs kids with special needs with normal kids, not, I hate that word, normal,
right.
but
typically developing.
Typically, you know. Anyway, so we read about it and we thought, this is perfect for Aaron. And then we went, and Josh can play with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, these brothers who at home are throwing a football and playing together, but are separated when it comes to competitive, they were able to go back to playing together. And all of our kids now, except our youngest, because he's not old enough, have played. And I love that when we get there, none of the parents go, okay, which is the athlete and which is the partner? Yes. Like, no one asks that. They're all just players. And I love that there's no individually now, there's no identifying which one is, you know, struggling. And, like, they're all just there. They're all just football players playing. Mm-hmm. And we have played every season. Last year they started a high school league because Aaron had graduated and Josh had graduated out. And it was awesome. And my older girls are like, we want in on this too. And now they play. And we just had our final game on Friday for this season. And they can't wait till it starts again in the spring. But I've told so many people about it because it just provides a way for these kids to go and feel like everybody else.
Yeah, and everybody else. Typically developing kiddos, they learn so much when they are helping and they're mentoring mm-hmm. these kiddos with different abilities.
Exactly.
It's teaching them so many mm-hmm. life lessons.
So I loved, when Josh graduated out of the flag football program, he went and played a couple years with the Special Olympics. Well, those were adults. He was little, like he was like 13, and he was playing with 30-year-olds, 300 pounds, like, and I'm like, okay, he's going to get hurt. But the thing I loved about that year that he played with them, he was friends, like legitimately friends with them, because a lot of their mental levels were 12, 13 mm-hmm. years old. And he would choose to go, like they would have, you know, they went to a BSU game and all sat together, and he wanted to sit right in the middle of them and talk to him, play with them, and they treated him like his little brother, and he legitimately loved those friendships.
Wow.
And I feel like my kids growing up, well, first with a special needs brother and then also playing in this program, they've learned empathy, they've learned kindness, they've learned that you can have a friendship with someone who is maybe a little different, and that friendship is beautiful. And like just this last Friday, it was so cute. My daughter, Sarah, this was her first year playing with him. And one of the athletes came over and is like, hey, is this your first game? Because she was on a different team and they hadn't played each other. She's like, is this your first game? And Sarah's like, no, I've played a couple this season. And she's like, okay, well, if you need any help, if anyone's giving you a hard time, you come to me. Like, it was just so cute. Like, here she is giving Sarah this pep talk. I'll take care of you.
Oh, my God.
I just loved it. But it's just such a beautiful thing. If you have an opportunity to go watch a game, it's just such a beautiful thing. And
it totally is.
And the funny thing is that our 3-year-old Gabe, when we named him Gabe, my boys couldn't wait. They went to flag football and told Coach Gabe,
yes,
we named our brother after you. It's like, well, I'm pretty sure your mom didn't, but thanks.
Oh.
I'm like, well, I just really loved the name, but it sure didn't hurt that I knew someone that made that name so beautiful.
So good.
Because he does.
He really
He makes life beautiful. But we always joke that Gabe's named after Coach Gabe.
I love it. He is amazing.
He is amazing.
And I love that you guys have just been playing for so long.
I know. Yeah. I love it. Awesome. And they do fall and they do spring. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I love is that they let them play for free.
Yes.
So they're with the Friday Night Flag program. And Friday Night Flag charges, I don't know, 100, 120, I can't remember. Anyway, they waive that for the, what do they call
game
it?
Game Changers.
Yeah, for but Game for Changers, the, but for the, five. For that. Yeah, they waive it because when they first started it, the people over Friday Night Flag said, we're not going to charge you for this because we know how much money it costs to do these therapies and to do these doctor's appointments. And the last thing we want to do is to put another financial burden on you. We want you to come play without worrying about that. And they don't do that just for the special needs kids. They do it for the partner players too. Uh-huh. Everybody plays for free. And I absolutely love that because going back to that, you know, it costs a lot of money. And to have that recognized, that was just one of those thank yous of we recognize what it costs. And this we're going to give to you.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Oh, so good. Well, we just can't thank you enough.
Oh, yes. Thank you. this was fun.
Yes.
This was fun. It's nice feeling recognized. Mm-hmm. It really is, because sometimes you don't feel that way.
Yeah. Well, now the whole world is going to recognize all of your efforts. Hopefully people will reach out and give you like an Instagram high five or something.
I would love that.
Holy cow. I could listen to Karen talk all day long.
She's an amazing storyteller.
She really is.
And her stories are so genuine and real, and she doesn't hold anything back.
No, I was on the edge of my chair the whole time. Just like, tell me more. Please keep talking.
Every time she stopped, I was like, okay, what's next? What you got next? And then she made me cry and just all the things.
Amazing. She has a wonderful family.
She's a wonderful mom.
She takes her job very seriously.
She does.
And she's wonderful. We have so many good things to say about her.
Yes.
But we hope that this episode was helpful for you and just inspired you to advocate for yourself and for your children, and we hope that you just have something that you can take away from this
to
episode.
Know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. It's so important.
Okay.
So, the next item on the agenda, let's chat about the Sensory Project Club.
Oh, yeah. So, it's going to open here in like a week and a half for the month of December. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of good things.
So many fun things.
So many good things.
We've got some little changes that we're making and just bringing you more content. Just our podcast on steroids, folks. We hope you join us there.
Yes. Link in our bio. Make sure you leave us a review for our podcast on iTunes. We like to hear from you.
Yeah, and that's how we reach more people.
Yes.
We're so grateful that all of you took the time this week to be here. And just, you know, reach out and give Karen a virtual high five.
Yes.
If you have a minute.
Go follow her and see her beautiful children, her beautiful family.
Her story is awesome. And we will chat with you next week.
Okay. See you next time.
So excited to work together and to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. This is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, sensory integration, and overall health and wellness. We do not know you or your child, therefore, we do not know any specific needs, therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist.